Well, hello. It's Akshat again. If you're new here, thank you for coming. Do stick around. And if you're returning, well, you already know I love hanging out with you. It is great to see you. Okay, story time. I was on a date once where I found myself refusing a drink. I'd had my requisite two, and I was turning the third one down out of respect for my liver. My date, understandably, was concerned about my health, which led to my declaration that the liver is my favorite gland. No, my favorite organ in the whole human body. So understand that I am literally saying this to another human being who I am attracted to. Both a metabolic workhorse and an immunological hub? I mean, come on. The range, the work ethic. It's the Meryl Streep of the body, and I will not disrespect it by making it deal with more alcohol. He laughed. You are probably laughing, too. But I mean every word of this today, just as much as I did back then in that very chic bar in Boston's Back Bay, where the lighting made me look very young indeed. All this to say that we're going to talk about liver stuff today. So, the immunological prowess of the liver isn't immediately obvious, but there are architectural features that provide certain hints. So consider the fact that the hepatic portal vein constitutively floods the liver with oxygenated blood, which is rich in nutrients, environmental antigens, and metabolites that are derived from our gut and whatever is modified by gut microflora. The capillaries that make up the blood supply of the liver, or the sinusoids as they are known, are made up of endothelial cells which lack a basement membrane, and they contain windows or pores called fenestrae through which the blood seeps through onto rows of hepatocytes conveying nutrients to them. However the hepatocytes respond to what they're receiving is a route by which they could generate unique antigens themselves. Kupffer cells are also a component of sinusoids. These guys are a type of macrophage, and they express antigen-presenting molecules as well as scavenger receptors. In fact, the endothelial cells that I was just talking about, you know, the ones with the fenestrae, they have also been known to express class II. It's at low levels, mostly, but under certain stimuli, the class II expression is upregulated. So, point being, these are all features that point to an infrastructure that has been created to influence local and even systemic immune responses. Admittedly, there is a lot to say about how the liver deals with microbes in the acute phase of infection. And when I refer to microbes, of course I'm referring to hepatotropic viruses and bacteria that cause disease, not necessarily microflora. So my aim today is to highlight how the metabolic and immunological functions of the liver synergize in dealing with potential threats or dysregulation. However, these threats, just to repeat myself, are not through infectious agents. I'm your sterile inflammation guy, remember? So with that said, let us talk about bile. So bile, B-I-L-E, you heard me right, is a product of the liver. It is a chartreuse-colored suspension composed mostly of water, bilirubin, some lipids, and bile salts. Its main function is to reduce the surface tension on fat droplets, thereby increasing their surface area. These fat droplets are now very accessible to lipases and can be metabolized efficiently. So remember the bile salts that I talked about that are part of the composition of bile? These bile salts are critical to the emulsification of dietary lipid. The building blocks of bile salts are bile acids, which are conjugated to either taurine or glycine. Primary bile acids are synthesized in the liver as part of cholesterol metabolism, which is a very involved series of reactions, utilizing at least 14 different enzymes. Wow, I'm sorry, I was having a bit of a war flashback to this graduate-level biochem course I took, where I had to memorize the structures and reactions that go into cholesterol metabolism and so many other metabolic pathways. I love metabolism, but this was a little excessive. Harrowing stuff. Anyway, to get back on task, primary bile acids are made in the liver. secondary bile acids result when gut microbiota modifies primary bile acids. Those of you who haven't turned me off yet, I see you and I appreciate you, because that was a lot of context. But I have a point. It will all make sense, I promise. Okay, so we've established two things. One, the synthesis of bile is linked to the metabolism of dietary fat. And two, the composition of the bile acid pool depends on microbiota. It is therefore reasonable to hypothesize that one component of the microbiome-gut connection that monitors disease states is, well, bile. In 2019, Ma and colleagues at the NIH explored this connection in a liver cancer model in mice. They altered the microbiome of tumor-bearing and control mice via antibiotic treatment, or they altered the bile acid pool exogenously via dietary supplementation of bile acids. They wanted to see how the treated mice would grapple with their tumors, and what they discovered was a pathway by which bile acid composition influenced T-cell, more specifically iNK T-cell or invariant natural killer T-cell recruitment to the liver. The chemokine CXCL16 is produced by the sinusoidal endothelial cells in the liver, and in antibiotic-treated mice, that is the mice that had the altered microbiome, there was a higher proportion of primary bile acids to secondary bile acids. And the production of CXCL16 from the livers of these mice was higher compared to that of control mice, the ones that did not have their microbiome modified through antibiotic treatment. What with there being more CXCL16, iNK T cells famously express a lot of CXCR6, which is the receptor for CXCL16, rushed to the liver and exerted anti-tumor effects. If the situation were reversed, as in if there was a preponderance of secondary bile acids, which one could accomplish through the dietary supplementation of bile acids, as they did, or the reintroduction of certain bacterial species, which they identified would modify primary bile acids in such a way that they did become secondary bile acids. So right, if there is a preponderance of secondary bile acids to primary bile acids, the production of CXCL16 now is weak, and tumor control, as a result, is poor. It's an elegant pathway, isn't it? But that's mice, you say. Does this even apply to humans? I don't know, honestly. But the likelihood seems pretty good, so stick with me with this one. Because the same group, they compared CXCL16 gene expression and the levels of primary and secondary bile acids in healthy and diseased tissue from liver cancer patients. They found the same correlations that they saw in the mice, that if the bile acid balance was tipped in favor of primary bile acids over secondary, the CXCL gene expression was robust. It was higher than if there were more secondary bile acids to be seen. I think the one difference, however, if this pathway were to come alive in humans, I think the one difference would be the type of T-cell that is recruited to the liver. I am an innate-like T-cell guy. That was a huge part of my graduate work. And I strongly suspect that as much as I adore them, it is not the iNK T-cells that would show up to a human liver by the bile acid recruitment pathway. iNKT cells are highly enriched in mice, not in human beings. Well, highly enriched in the livers of mice, not in that of human beings. But a related population of cells, the mucosa-associated invariant T cells, or MAIT cells, also CXCR6 high, make up around 25 to 50% of the lymphocytes that are found in the human liver. So maybe it is these guys that are mobilized in humans via this bile acid recruitment pathway. Again, I don't know. This is conjecture. It's a hypothesis. It's my hypothesis, and I'm sticking to it. Now, apart from how biliary secretions originating in the liver influence tumor control, this work also invites us to consider how we may use antibiotics. And I think this is important, right? Because these questions that stand before us are things like, are we too quick to prescribe antibiotics? if antibiotic treatment changes the bile acid pool, leading to immune cell recruitment in the liver, we have to think carefully about how we prescribe people with autoimmunity with antibiotics. We want to avoid immune cell activation or infiltration for these individuals. As an example, something like this could be very bad news for someone who has autoimmune hepatitis. The broad spectrum nature of antibiotics also represents a bit of a wild card. Maybe there is a future where we can use something like phage therapy to manipulate the microbiome in a very systematic way so as to delete the obstacle microbe, keep the rest, and reap whatever immunological fruit result from this. To add to my point, the one bacterial species that the group identified as being the main converter of primary bile acids into the immunosuppressive secondary ones is one Clostridium sindens. Antibiotic treatment does not selectively target Clostridium sindens, but all Clostridia, and other bacteria besides. Thus, you now have a lot of open, colonizable real estate for potential pathogens. And indeed, frequent antibiotic treatments are positively correlated with recurring C. diff infections. So do we really want to lose C. sindens? It sounds like it's providing some pretty solid competition to C. diff as far as colonizing space is concerned. And finally, we must also keep tumor heterogeneity in mind. This mechanism is breathtaking, don't get me wrong, but it may not be applicable to all tumors. No one in the paper is claiming that, of course, but I always think that it's important to keep that sort of thing in mind when we are evaluating a work like this one. Look, I'm not venting my spleen here. This is one of my favorite papers of 2019, and I'm excited to be yapping about it here, because it's wild, isn't it, how microbiota and immune cells are using bile to slip into each other's DMs, if you will, to facilitate their crosstalk. The liver stays winning. There's just very little else that I can say about that. Now, if all this microflora talk has piqued your appetite for more, our very own Dr. Autumn Dove has written a masterful blog post on the Antibodies website discussing how the microbiome modulates allergies. You gotta read it. It's so good that even the research group who published that work retweeted that blog post. So, I mean, go check it out. Not now, but do. Seeing as we are talking about lipid metabolism and its immunoconsequences, I'd be remiss if I didn't mention the liver X receptors, or the LXRs. These are nuclear receptors that were discovered around the mid to late 90s, and of the two LXRs, LXR alpha is expressed primarily in the liver, and is another sensor of lipid metabolism vis-a-vis the binding of cholesterol derivatives like oxysterols. The LXRs exert immunosuppressive or immunomodulatory effects. I can never say that word in one go. Immunomodulatory, there we are. So the LXRs can epigenetically repress pro-inflammatory transcription factors like NF-kappa-B, AP1, STAT1. And in contrast to the bile pathway, LXR engagement is seemingly ideal in chronic inflammatory disorders or autoimmune disorders where immune activation is deleterious. However, it could stymie anti-tumor activity. Because some tumors, which they do this either intrinsically or because of metabolic addiction, some tumors are capable of generating the oxysterols that feed the LXRs, and therefore they end up preventing immunosurveillance or tumor rejection. Research on LXRs right now is emerging, and there's just so much about their roles in immunometabolism that is both intriguing and yet remains unclear. But you know what? Let me hook you up with a solid review in the footnotes of this episode. And if one of you listening in is working on LXRs, reach out. You know, it would be really cool to hear where the field is right now. Right, so I'm thinking we stop here. This is not the end of the road for hepatic happenings. We haven't even touched on carbohydrate metabolism in the liver and its role in diabetes. But let's save that for another day. We've tackled lipids today. I think we've done great. But let me leave you with this, though. The hepatic immunological status quo is tolerogenic, even low-key immunosuppressive, if you will. There's this general air of IL-10 in there that is meticulously maintained by several myelomonocytic populations. However, this peace is easily broken by the byproducts of aberrant metabolism. Aberrant metabolism is often a harbinger of bigger problems ahead, and the liver, by keeping tabs on metabolism, is well poised to raise the alarm. Both the liver and the lung, in their own way, are perhaps the most open to the environment outside, the lung obviously through ventilation, but the liver through what we eat and how it's processed. And that's why it is my favorite gland, no organ, in the whole human body. As far as the dude for my date, well, he never called back. And, you know, that is just as well. As an old Spice Girl song goes, if you want to be my lover, you gotta get with my liver. That is so bad. Please don't unsubscribe. Bye.